Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Diane Sevening is a licensed addiction counselor and assistant professor in the Department of Addiction Studies at the University of South Dakota. She was recently presented with a 2017 Lifetime Achievement Award by the International Coalition for Addiction Studies Education. That's a group of professors, teachers, professionals, and programs specializing in addiction studies. She's here with me in the studio in Vermilion right now. Diane, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you having me.
And congratulations. What is it like, at this point in your career to sort of be recognized with something called a Lifetime Achievement Award?
Right. Well, it's really an honor, and I'm so humbled by this award, and it's the most heartfelt award I've ever received. Yeah. Because it represents a movement that we started in 1990, and for me to be given this award, it's just so appreciated.
Yeah. In 1990, what happened? Is it a movement at the University of South Dakota, do you mean, through education, or what's the movement?
It was more of a movement for addiction studies educators, and it originated with Dick Wilson in the state of California. He taught at Saddleback Community College, and he developed a group of addiction educators in California, and he decided, well, if we can make all this headway and get the awareness out and get the awareness out there, why can't we do this nationally? So then he gathered a list of department chairs within the United States and contacted them and said, would you be interested in getting together to talk about forming a group or forming an association that would be of benefit to addiction studies educators and education? And so that's how it all started.
How soon do you become involved in this process?
Our department chair went the first two meetings before it actually became known as the International Coalition for Addiction Studies Education, INCASE. And he decided that he just didn't want to do it anymore. So he said, Sevening, which he always called me that. That was John Williams, our department chair at that time. And he said, you're going to go. You're going to go and you're going to represent us. And I said, okay. And then it's history from there. Yeah. I just became very involved, became a regional vice president of the association, and then eventually became president. So I'm a former president of INCASE, and then currently I'm treasurer of INCASE.
What about this national conversation captivated you?
It was more about helping people to understand that individuals who have a substance-related or substance use disorder really have a medical problem. It's considered to be a disease. And in order to treat this disease, we need to have highly educated individuals so that they can become competent addiction professionals, whether they're working in treatment or in prevention. And so it was really getting the message out there that we need to have qualified, educated individuals with knowledge and skills who can help these people get into recovery.
What difference does it make in a tangible way to have somebody with, I mean, I guess, what's the gap? How big is the potential difference if you have somebody who is helping you, who has that professional education, who has that training? What can it mean to a person and their family?
Well, what we see is that someone who does have the education and the knowledge and the experience are more qualified to provide individualized care. So it's not so much, a mass treatment approach. It helps the individual. It helps us to understand what the individual needs, and that also includes family, includes community. along with helping them get to into recovery.
So in my mind, it's no different from a cancer diagnosis. Every cancer is different. You have to, I mean, there's a genetic component to cancers that we're finding now, that if you have your tumor sequence, that there could be different pharmaceutical applications. Do we continue to learn this about substance abuse disorders too, where there's always, you know, a unique environment, a unique genetic component, and all that? We're learning so much more, right?
Yes, absolutely. And you're exactly right when you say that. So it really is no difference than cancer or diabetes or heart problems. It's substance use related, right? It's a substance use disorder. And everybody is different, and each drug that they use is different, and they need it to be treated different. And we need to understand the effects of each one of those drugs. Mm. And, you know, like, what's the withdrawal process? How long does that last? Do we need medication assistance in treating that?
So I think it would be fairly common for a person with a cancer diagnosis to go into their doctor and seek that information.
Yes.
How common is it for a person who has a substance abuse disorder to approach it in that way and to feel, you know, a willingness to be and a safe, you know, security to be open and vulnerable about and really view it in a similar way to how we maybe view mm-hmm. cancer treatment? Or is there so much more of a stigma about a substance abuse disorder where people are even afraid to approach it like that?
There is still, unfortunately, that stigma, mm-hmm. which is sad, because it is a health problem. Actually, it's considered to be the number one public health problem mm-hmm. in the United States. And our hope is, again, to get the message out that it takes more than willpower. These individuals are sick.
Right.
And they need specialized care to get into recovery.
Let's talk about the program at the University of South Dakota, the department. Tell me mm-hmm. some about that.
Well, the Addiction Studies Department's been here at the University of South Dakota since 1973, and it started out as a training program, then eventually became a degreed program. So we offer a bachelor's degree, and that's offered face-to-face on campus and then also online. And then we also offer a master's degree in addiction studies, and that's totally online. And then we just recently started a PhD program mm. through health sciences with an addiction track, and we currently have two PhD candidate right. students enrolled in that. So we're very excited.
One of the
about
things
that.
When I think of addiction studies is, and forgive me because I'm a parent of a teenager, but I think job security. I mean, this is something that the communities need,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like if you follow this path, you know, if it's something that fits well with what you want to do with your life,
right.
That you're never going to run out of opportunities to be of service in the
right.
community. Do you see that it's growing at USD, and more students are saying
yes?
Yeah.
Yes, because we currently have 101 undergraduate majors, which online and on campus, and we have 47 master's degree students. And it's, like you mentioned, it's job security,
right.
and it's also a job you will never be bored.
Mm-hmm.
Never. You get a surprise every day, which is very challenging and rewarding.
How do you prepare them not only for the academic rigor of this and for a field that is surely changing rapidly, but for those surprises and for the heaviness that this kind of work might be, you know, again, not to extend the metaphor too far, but mm-hmm. as you prepare an oncology student for the inevitable loss that comes with being in that world every day and treating cancer, you surely must prepare these students for the inevitable, you know, challenges and losses that they will experience as professionals over a career. How do you approach that?
We do offer, we have specific lab classes where the students get to apply the knowledge they've gained in working with a real life situation. Mm. And then we also use a lot of case studies, and then along with, you know, the textbook and our own researched information that we find. And then they also, towards the end of their education or the end of their coursework, then they're required to do a field experience or an internship, where they actually go into a treatment setting or a prevention setting, and then they work with clients under the supervision of a licensed addiction counselor or certified prevention specialist.
What are the rewards of this kind of work? We talked about the challenges. How has it been rewarding for you over a career?
Oh, just to see the change they make, to watch somebody grow from feeling like they're no one, they have nowhere to go, suddenly realizing, oh my God, I can really do this. I feel good about this. And I see that in students all the time. And just to watch them blossom and grow, and the potential they have is just amazing, and they don't even realize it half the time. But when they actually get to do the work, it's like they're just blown away, and that's so exciting. And then when I worked as a counselor, what was really exciting, because you don't get a lot of successes, but when you do get the successes, it's just, that's the biggest reward of all. Yeah. Because you see them turn their life around. You see that they feel good about themselves again, that they're not hopeless. Mm-hmm. They're not a loser like they thought they were, and they've got so much to offer. And that is the most rewarding part.
As a counselor, you know, we mentioned individualized, you know, treatment. So mm-hmm. I know you can't make generalizations, but do you see themes for success? Do you see people come in and, you know, if they have this kind of support or this kind of motivation or this kind of environment, mm-hmm. that you have a better chance of seeing success? What themes do you see for people who are trying to overcome addiction that can often lead to their success?
Well, a big one is having a support. So family is really important. And so if the family is understanding, and it's important too when the individual is receiving treatment that the family receive treatment too, because it is considered to be a family disease as well. And so if everybody's on the same page and understanding, then that is really a benefit and can really help. The environment is another area, because if it's an environment where the drug use is condoned, you know, and it's a norm, for them to leave that environment and go to seek treatment and return to that environment, it really sets them up for a relapse. Mm-hmm. And so if there is community involvement in wanting to change the environment, change the community, that's very helpful as well. So it's a whole system that's involved. There's laws included, mm-hmm. Involved with that. The media is involved with that, getting out the word, okay. You know, on what's harmful, what isn't, what's beneficial, what isn't, yeah. You know, what changes can be made. So it's a whole systematic entity, really.
We've talked often this year on this program and other programs. I know Stephanie Risser on South Dakota Focus talked about opioid addiction this year and told some very compelling stories about things that are happening in South Dakota, grants that are coming through at the state level and how those grants would be applied. Mm-hmm. You've known about opioid addiction for a long time, before we sort of took notice of it in the right way that we are today. Mm-hmm. How long has it been something that's you know, prominent in your profession?
Well, we've actually been aware of it since I would have to say the mid-90s, mm. that we really saw a problem with that. And then it's prescription drugs, but then it's also heroin. And so the new heroin was coming in, and it was the most pure heroin of all. And then, of course, now we have the designer drugs, or the synthetics, mm. and they're more potent than even some of the prescribed medications. So they're constantly underground chemists, if you will. Right. The clandestine laboratory chemists are creating more and more synthetic drugs using some of the prescription medications like morphine and heroin, and then adding other ingredients to it, which makes them even more addictive and lethal.
Hmm. What does prevention look like?
Well, prevention is very, very helpful. There's such a need for it. Again, there's been funding problems involved with that. So it's an area where we really need to have more awareness and funding mm-hmm. so that programs can be promoted and can be administered so that, again, communities and families become yeah. aware of
What's the effective messaging for prevention? Is it sort of a fear-based or a fact-based plus a fear-based? Like, what does effective prevention education and outreach look like?
The best approach is to provide factual information. Scare tactics never work.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've heard about, you know, if you scare them, it works. But no. And we know that's research indicates that, too. So it really has to be factual-based. It has to be something that's understandable and relatable so that they can begin to apply some of that information and then also follow up with some of that information, because sometimes the facts are presented, but then there's no changes made after those facts are presented. Mm. So the change has to be made once they become aware of what can be done, how can we do it, and how can we work together to make that happen.
Communication in families.
Huge.
Key, it must be.
Absolutely.
So even if the resources don't exist, have those conversations. How do you have a conversation with your teenagers? Leave us with that. You know, what sort of things, you know, do you need to say?
Right. I think one of the biggest things is just to say, this is what's happening today. Mm-hmm. If you are aware of it, please feel free to come and talk to me. We'll find the answers together if I don't know the answers. But to be involved in their life and to encourage that open communication with them. If they have questions, to, you know, find the answers. And if you can't, research them together.
Right.
That's why we have Google, right?
Families in Google.
There you go.
A little motivation.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I think you served, once again, listeners of South Dakota with some of this information. What's next for you? You're the president-elect of the National Association for Addiction Professionals, so more leadership on the horizon for you.
Yes. Yep. So I'll be taking office in October of 2018 and becoming president of NADAC for 2 years, so I'm really looking forward to that.
We look forward to having you back on the program. Anytime you want to talk about things that awareness that we need to raise in the state, you can come and join us anytime.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That's Diane Sevening. She's a licensed addiction counselor. She was recently given the 2017 Lifetime Achievement Award by the International Coalition for Addiction Studies Education. She teaches at the University of South Dakota, Department of Addiction Studies.